CliffCentral.com.
Halala, my freestyle, halala. Halala, Limpopo, halala. Halala, Gauteng, halala. Halala, KwaZulu-Natal, halala. Halala, Western Cape, halala.
Halala, we were going to build 14,000 or 18,000 houses for you, halala, but I took the money, halala, and put it in my pocket, halala. Summon a bitch. All right, I hope someone goes to jail about that. But there are other news stories, new fresh ones that Mabali Moloi has kept her eye on all morning for you so that you could be informed and you can get to the office today and everyone will go, oh, how did she know so much? How does – Denise is really smart, you know? She knows everything. How is that possible, Denise? And Denise won't tell them. She says, I'm not going to tell them about this podcast. It's not fair.
But you should tell your friends.
No, you must tell your friends and your enemies.
Okay, yeah.
Tell everybody. Run, people.
Run. Run.
Spread the word.
Tell everybody that you know.
Tell everyone.
All right, what do we got, Mubs?
Okay, so how often have you heard that January is supposedly divorce season, right?
Yes.
That's when all the women decide, that's it, I'm done, and then they...
Is it the women that divorce the men at this time of
year? Yes. This is according to stats and a new survey.
Yeah.
The most divorces are initiated by women.
Okay.
And a new survey...
Good for them.
A new survey has revealed that South African wives are likely to cheat on their husbands less than 10 years into the marriage.
Really?
Okay. This is according to data from a cheating website called Victoria Milan, which was started by a woman, obviously.
Yes.
And according to this data, South African women wait longer than those in other countries before they start cheating on their spouses. The site, which facilitates discreet extramarital affairs, found that South African women wait generally or on average about 6 years after the exchanging vows before embarking on an affair. Now, compared to women in other parts of the world, this is actually quite a long wait because in Ireland, the wives there wait 3 years. Swedish women will only entertain their husbands for 4 years before they start having affairs.
3 years?
3 years, that's it. That's all you get.
You haven't even finished unpacking all your things. And you're already like...
American women seem to be the most loyal because they will, on average, wait 8 years into the marriage before they start having their affairs.
Wow, this is amazing. So basically, you women, you go off, you calculate, you give us a trial period. That's what you're talking about.
That's what
That's
it is.
That's pretty much what's happening here.
It's like when you go to the shops. I've seen women do this. They go to the shops, they'll get a dress, they'll take it home, they'll try it on. They might even wear it to an event. And then they'll say, oh, no, I don't want this dress. Take it back to the shop. I've seen this happen. So you're doing that with us men, and we have no power to resist you.
The data then also goes into the various reasons why women cheat, right? I mean, there are a host of reasons why anybody cheats, man or woman.
Yeah.
Really, there could be 100 different reasons,
sure.
Right?
Absolutely.
And then in terms of the affair age, it seems that at around their 30s is when a lot of South African women begin to let their eyes wander.
Look.
36 seems to be the average age for when married South African women decide, okay, all right, I'm going to start dipping my toe in Jeff's pond.
Oh. Jeff, huh? Oh, lucky Jeff.
I didn't lucky know what him. Else to say.
Do you think, this is such an age-old discussion, but it's something we need to keep. Should we reevaluate marriage? Who was it who came in here the other day and said, marriage should be like this? It should last for 10 years and then it automatically expires. So when you say, I want to be your husband or I want to be your wife, what you do is you enter an automatic 10-year contract period. At the end of that contract period, you get to decide, do we renew or do we let this lapse? And then you go into the next 10 years. Maybe make it 5 years. It sounds like a lot of you women want to get off that wagon a lot earlier.
Earlier than 10 years.
So let's say it's 5 years. I mean, maybe we need new systems. Marriage is very antiquated in some ways. Don't get me wrong. It works for some people.
Sure.
Less and less, by the way, every year. It works for less and less people every year in the world.
Yes, that's SA will tell you that marriages in South Africa have decreased. So less and less South Africans are getting married.
And even the ones that do, less and less of those marriages last.
Yes, because the divorce stats have increased.
So look, I don't know whether that's good or bad. I'm not going to judge. It doesn't help for you and me to argue about what should and shouldn't happen. Look at what is happening. So less and less people are getting married. And of the people who do get married, less and less of those marriages last. So there's a problem. No, let's be honest about this.
True.
Let's look at ways we can make it better. So let's reevaluate the whole system. Let's take it down at its root. Maybe we build a different model.
Yeah, I'm not opposed to reevaluating the system because the reasons you got married 100 years ago were completely different to why you'd be getting married today, right?
Correct.
But guys, the big stumbling block here is you've got to bring Jesus in. So Jesus doesn't work. Jesus isn't going to go over every 10 years.
Jesus never got married himself, so he's in no position to tell the rest of us how to live our lives.
Yeah, but like marriage is about getting God and the state involved in your life, more God than anything else, right?
Well, actually, like more the lawyers.
Yeah, state is also a big problem.
Obviously, the lawyers who think they're God, yeah. But the whole thing is when you renew your vows, I mean, Jesus is going to be like, look, are you coming or going? It's one or the other. Ever after is what I said, isn't it?
Okay. So
I'm a bit sketchy on this. That's why I need some help.
I don't want to get involved in, if people believe in X, Y, and Z religion, and that's the reason that you're getting married, that's fine. Then you must bear the consequences of whether it works or not because you based it on your belief system. That's cool. Not going to criticize you. So Ben raises an important point, but let's be practical now. Imagine we are the people who make the laws.
But not just practical, just be honest. Okay. That's all.
So what would you do, Sia, if I made you President of marriages tomorrow. You get to decide the nature of anybody's semi-permanent or permanent relations with other people. Because let's face it, there are legal consequences to marriage. Like those are the people who can visit you in hospital if you're in intensive care. Those are the people who can inherit from your will if you don't leave one. Mm. Or rather from your estate if you don't leave a will. These are the people who have a claim to custody of your children if something happens to you. There are certain consequences to marriage. Surnames will change. Assets will be shared. You will be able to...
Community of property or not.
And there are tax implications. So there are lots of different things that happen when you're married. It's not as if it's just, you and I can live together and we'll have the same life as people who don't. So what would you do?
I would ban divorce. You know
why?
Because then we'll be like the mafia. Once you're in, you're in. And it would also like help us with a lot of things. You know, cheating husband. Whoopsie.
So you're going to force people.
I can't leave.
You're gonna
force
them to stay.
Kill him.
Yeah. See, that is terrible. Yeah.
Cheating horrible people are out of society.
Oh, gosh. So you just want spouses killing their partners. Left, right, and center.
CS's solution is a bloodbath.
They are actually helping us with the solution here.
See, you've got no idea.
Have you never cheated on someone before?
No, I don't believe in that.
Ever? You've never?
Never. No. Just be honest. I've walked out of dates. I've stopped answering calls just because I'm not interested in the person anymore. But now to tiptoe around and go,
it's a lot more difficult. If you're in a relationship and you have children together, you can't just
not answer your calls.
Yeah.
I get comparing my dating life to marriage is totally different, but honesty is still
you know
the best
what? I take it back. You are not president of marriages. We've removed that responsibility. You're like Angie Mocheche is with education. You've screwed
absolutely
it up.
Not.
I'm going to hand this responsibility over to Mabali.
Look, I like your idea of having a renewal system instead, right? But what I would do is I'd break it down into different levels or packages, if you will. So you
get a gold, diamond,
the bronze, silver, and gold package. So maybe your gold package will be option to renew after 10 years. Then the silver is after 5 years. And then the bronze, you know, for those people who are like, I want to try this marriage thing, but I don't know if I'm ready for gold status
yet. So bronze would say underneath, what do you even trying to do.
Why even?
Why waste your time?
Something like that.
All right. So the bronze package is like a year or two.
Yeah, maybe 2 to 3 years, you know? I mean, what's the shortest?
This way you'd be able to figure out how much people value their relationships. Because they always say at weddings, oh, I love you forever. And then, you know, 2 years later, you're sitting around the table and there's only one of them there.
You see, the problem is couples would fight over which package they want to sign up for.
Exactly.
So maybe the husband is like, okay, let's start with the bronze. And the wife is like, what? You don't want gold?
You see, that's already a problem
yes,
from the start.
But that's great, because then if they can't figure it out, they're not meant to be together. See, people get fixated on the wedding, not the marriage. The important thing is the marriage. That's the lasting thing.
That's the long haul.
The wedding is a day. It's just one day. And sure, you get a lot of attention. Everybody is all impressed with you, and you wear your dress and you wear your tux and you kiss each other in front of everybody. It's all about you. Me.
Mm.
Good. But now you got the marriage to deal with. So let's figure out the best way to do this. I don't know that old school, I promise to love you forever, can be taken seriously anymore. Very few people get that right. So 10 years, gold package, Mub says. You sign up for the gold package. That means you've pledged to be together for 10 years. If it doesn't work after 10 years, it just lapses. You just move out, separate out. It's all part of the contract. It's all figured out beforehand. It's very smooth, effortless, no lawyers involved.
Sure.
You both know what the deal is. If you decide to renew, you renew. You either change the terms or you carry on the old terms. Right? It's like buying a car and you decide your warranty runs out.
Yes.
Am I going to buy a new car or am I going to keep this car and pay every time I have to take it for a service?
Yes, but you see, part of the problem is that people don't want to think about marriages. It's like buying a car. They want it to be romantic, Garrett.
And it's meant to be. And
they want it to be forever.
That's fine. You can want all of that. You can have whatever you like in your mind and your imagination. Practically, again, it's not about shoulda, woulda, coulda. I'm different. You're not. Statistics show that more and more people are deciding either not to get married or, when they're in marriages, deciding to get out of them. So forget about what you think the world is. That's how it's really working. You cannot deny reality.
I've heard a lot of people say, you know, marriage is supposed to be about forever and about commitment and about you trying to make it work. So if you can't handle all those requirements, then why do some of you people even bother
in the first place
getting into the sanctity of marriage? But I mean, the statistics show that there are less and less South Africans getting married today than ever before. So what is that telling us? It's telling us that there are less and less people who want forever. Forever is too long.
Well, Michelle says, as a divorced woman, I still have my ex as my next of kin. My advice, we've got no kids, my advice is don't get married. Just stay together and be happy. Stop worrying about tomorrow. Think about now.
I'd be interested to find out if, what's her name, Michelle?
Mm-hmm.
If things for her changed in her relationship when they got married. Because you see, they still talk. And they, you know, he's still her next of kin.
Yeah,
but did the title marriage or, you know, the expectations of it.
Are you kidding?
Ruin the relationship.
You wear the ring. You're Mr. and Mrs.
Sure.
It's got their social implications to this. Of course it changes it. Might not
your
change
identity has changed.
Yeah, you're this now, is my husband or wife, as opposed to this is just the person I'm banging at the moment.
Yeah, you see, being a husband or wife comes with...
That's how you just watered down relationships.
Being a husband or wife comes with all sorts of duties and responsibilities. You know, now there are all sorts of expectations from people, from your mother-in-law.
Yeah, like what if the other family then has such demands on you?
Yeah.
Like I've seen people who you go, oh, I've got to get to go do this. Like it must be a drain for them.
I know, especially around the time of year we've just come out of, holidays. So, I was talking to someone the other day. They're not
all
even,
that family time.
They're not even married. This guy and this girl, they've been together for a couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Weeks, not even months. They had to go and spend Christmas Day with the one set of parents, Christmas Eve with another set of parents, then the day after Christmas with another one. It was just very messy, the whole thing.
Oh, so that's why Jan has all the divorces, because after Christmas you go spend time with your crazy family. No thanks.
Roman says that's what happens when you let the state enforce personal contracts. People should be free to marry one or multiple people of different races and sexes without the government being an obstacle.
Oh, now you see, I didn't think about that.
What if you have a marriage but you're married to 10 people?
What's called polygamy?
Polygamy.
Polygamy.
That's what the president has. And if it's good enough for him, it should be good enough for the rest of us.
Imagine having all they also
open marriages. I mean, I don't know how they're really different from the, you know, polygamy model, because it involves more than one partner. But, you know, open marriages is when, yes, you're my husband, but, you know, if...
We go and zip it into it outside.
Well, I mean, we're allowed to bring in other sexual partners in the union.
Now you're talking about complicated.
Well, I know, but there are all these things that exist.
I don't know one open relationship that has lasted a long time.
I don't know one open relationship, period.
I
don't know. I don't personally know people who are in an open relationship or an open marriage. I know a lot of people.
There's a reason for that, too. They're just very few.
I know a lot of people who are getting divorced.
Because someone thought they were in an open relationship. Yeah. They tried to make it seem that way.
All right, well, we'll never solve this. Humans and their relationships are always going to be complicated, but I don't see why we need lawyers and governments involved in it.
Well, here's something with lawyers and governments getting involved.
By the way, sorry, I'm sorry I didn't ask you to be president of marriages, Ben. I thought we've given you enough responsibility for this morning.
Yeah, no, it's really okay, Gareth. Thanks.
All right, see ya.
So Mariah Carey tried it when she broke off engagement and she said to her ex-fiancé that she wants $50 million because this is what she could have made because of him, you know.
Yeah, she wanted a payout.
Absolutely. So now a Zimbabwean teenage girl also wants a payout. Now, she actually won, though, in a lawsuit against a 32-year-old ex-lover for taking her virginity and then ditching her, even though the ex-lover previously having promised to marry her. So 19-year-old Natalie Madziwa sued Joel Moyer for breaching his promise. And she has now basically earned herself $2,000 in the court of law.
Oh, so, she actually held them to the contract.
She got some money. So she initially demanded $8,000 in seduction damage, as they call it, saying her chances of marriage were now slim as she had lost her virginity and was now pregnant. So Madziwa claims she only discovered that Moyer was also already married when she had already fallen pregnant. And so, hey, she's now doing it for herself. She said that the development made her feel humiliated amongst her peers and in her communities. And the magistrate awarded the complaint $2,000 for charges, as Moyer agreed with the case against him.
All right. Well, there you go. You see, you can set up your own contract and then the courts will enforce it.
Yo, now everyday folk are also going to come with their own demands.
Sure.
Guys, we should sue our exes as well for emotional damage.
Do you know what?
I know,
I know someone who's just recently gone through a divorce. They just let the wife take whatever she wanted. He just wanted to get her out of his life. He said, I can make back this money. I could buy a new house. I can get a new car. But this, she has to go.
The rot has to go.
she has to go. He needed to get rid of her that badly. He was like, just take whatever you want, but go away.
Yo, that is when you are done.
Yeah.
You don't want anything else.
Can you imagine all the years together? They've worked. They were building houses together. They were... I don't think they had kids. No, they don't have kids.
How long were they married for?
Oh, it must have been 12, 13 years. Oof. Yeah.
That's a long
time. See, now, if you know that you're working on a 10-year contract together, by year 9, you're starting to think, well, let's sit down and have a proper discussion about renewal. Or let's sit down and decide that it's the end. Very sensible, very adult, very sober. Mm. No emotion. You don't need emotion in this thing because it's a legal arrangement. You could be together. You could love each other. You could hate each other. That's your business. But legally, you know the contract's coming to an end in 10 years. Sensible stuff. I'm telling you now, we've got to take the feelings out of this stuff. Because the lawyers don't feel anything. They don't care. Do you think the court, when it forces this Zimbabwean teenager, the guy who did who went into contract with her, do you think that the court applies emotion to it? Hell no. Be sensible. These things have got to do with practical stuff. They have very little to do with how you feel. How you feel is how you treat other people. It's how you are when you're around that person. It's how much you like or don't like them. It's how much you respect or don't respect them. Those things are important, of course, but they shouldn't be written into contracts. You can't promise to love anyone forever, just like you can't promise that you're going to win at the casino.
You are a lot more practical than I think the average person. A lot of people base a lot of their decisions purely on feeling. It's about how they felt in that moment.
But that's what makes us human, though.
Yeah, well, all I'm saying is...
He's an Ewok, then. He's not a human.
Sure, I'm an alien. Sure, I'll take it. But that's why so many people are so unhappy, because they base these things on feelings. Yeah,
possibly.
And then when it goes wrong, they go, oh, but I felt great at the time. Feelings yes. change.
Feelings
innately,
change.
Innately, though, we Stupid. All want to live a Taylor Swift love song in our lives.
Do you? You want to live a Taylor Swift love song?
Absolutely. Want to look into someone's eyes.
Taylor and then Swift doesn't
strategically,
do
Strategically, there's like
Taylor Swift
wind
would
through
eat.
Their hair.
Taylor Swift eats... removes the meat and spits out just okay. about every man that she's ever been with.
Random. Taylor Swift is a seahorse. She eats her prey.
Horrible example.
Prey mantis.
A Michael Bublé love song.
Even worse. All right, enough. We're losing our way. There must be other stuff we need to do, Mubs.
Traveling, getting on an aeroplane. There are a lot of things that you might find annoying with regards to traveling, right? Especially if it's going to be one of those long distance flights.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you are completely loaded with money, a lot of the time you're going to have to do with economy class. Yep. So what's happened is an American survey has polled thousands of Americans to try and pinpoint what passengers find to be the most annoying thing that passengers do on a plane.
I follow an Instagram account called Passenger Shaming.
Oh dear, what happens there?
Ben's laughing. Have you seen it?
No, that sounds brilliant though.
So great. So whenever anyone does something really socially unacceptable on a plane, goodness. Like someone will take their shoes off and put them up on top of the seat in front of them. And they'll take passenger shaming is basically everyone in the world who travels. They take pictures of these people who behave badly and they all get uploaded into passenger shaming. It is hysterical. Baby cries the whole way through a flight. You take a picture of the baby with the red face screaming. If it's someone who's drunk on a plane, you take a picture of them. Someone who has a bag that's much too big for the overhead baggage thing and then tumbles out and hits someone on the those people, they're all reported on this thing. So what are the most annoying things according to this survey?
Yeah, according to this poll, let's go through them in order of least annoying to most annoying, right?
Mm-hmm.
So least annoying is what they phrase the single and ready to mingle. So it's that person who sits next to you and thinks, hore, this Ben character is a very good looking guy. Let me see what chance I stand with him. And then she starts hitting on you. The single and ready to mingle passenger, considered the least annoying. Then you have the mad bladder. So that passenger who gets up every 10 minutes throughout the flight because they, I don't know.
That's, you've got to go to the doctor. Like you're getting up every 10 minutes to go and pee. You need to go to the doctor.
You see, sometimes maybe you are suffering from some kind of medical condition, but you had to get on this flight for work.
But then you need to book an aisle seat, not a window seat. All right, please. This is very important. I don't understand. I see it happen in shopping malls. I see it in any public places. There are a lot of people who are spatially unaware of what's going on.
Mm.
Like they live in their own little bubble. They walk. They're busy looking up at the sky. They're checking out the shop windows. And you're standing behind them and you're trying to get past. And they have no idea. They'll go slowly. Then they'll stand in an elevator with their hand on both railings, the left and the right. Block the thing and they won't walk. Now, an escalator is not meant to be stood on. It's meant to be walked up. You actually need to move with the escalator. The point is it gets you there faster. Not, I'm going to stand here and let the machines do the work so I can pack on another 20 kilograms as if I haven't got enough on my fat backside. Huh? People are spatially unaware. So when someone sits on a plane and they know that they're going to be peeing every 15 minutes, sit on the aisle.
Yeah, I know that pregnant women are banned from flying at some point, but they would possibly, fit in this category of needing to get up to go to the bathroom a lot.
Then let's strike a deal. When we sit down, you say to me, listen, I got this bladder problem. I'm going to be up and down the whole time. You have the window. I'll take the aisle. I'll go. No problem.
Yep. Okay, then you have the pungent foodies. Mm. Yes, it's those people who sit next to you, and then all of a sudden they're opening up this cafetina of anchovies or whatever else is in there.
You know that happened to me once.
In America, no? It happened in America.
A woman from New York to LA sat next to me, and she opened up this lunchbox, the like of which you have never smelt such foul and disgusting and revolting and despicable and just unacceptable food to be eaten in public. Anchovies in a tin. She had smelly cheese.
Oh.
She was a revolting human being to start off with. She looked like Jabba the Hutt.
Okay. All right. So then in ninth place is the armrest hog.
Stank. Oh. She was chewing the whole time. She opened packets the entire way there. This woman was a disgrace. I would have opened, if I could have opened up the emergency exit and thrown her out, I would have done it. And she spread herself all over the whole area. My seat, her seat, the tables and the seat in front of us. And she sat there going. She couldn't even open, she couldn't close her goddamned mouth because she couldn't breathe through a blocked nose. Probably blocked by the fat deposits.
Okay, Gareth.
That's when you should be able to have a shoot.
Anchovies.
Like, you know, Game of Thrones, there's that person who lives in that high turret, whatever, and there's that hole in the floor.
No.
It's like that boy who still breastfeeds, but he's 16 or something.
Okay, yeah, up in that.
Like, you should be able to have that in the plane, okay? Like one of those air capsules. No. Like you get them in submarines, those airlocks.
And the whole plane votes for the most annoying passenger. Exactly. They get put in that thing and dropped into the.
Exactly. So what you do is you.
That person paid money just like you did.
No. Yeah, but they're acting terribly. So what you do is.
Down the chute. Down the chute.
Exactly. So what you do is you get a light, okay? So obviously when you go in long haul, the light's dim. So you press a button and a spotlight goes on you, and then like music plays, and you stand up and go, "This person over here has just farted four times. I propose down the chute." And everyone goes, "Yeah, four times farting. That's not good." And then everyone starts chanting, and then eventually through critical sound mass, down the chute.
And you know what?
That you guys would also are tough customers, man.
That would add to the entertainment value of every flight.
And Mubs, I tell you what, tough customers. Do you reckon anyone's going to fart after that? Not a single person will fart after that.
Do you think anyone on that plane, from the moment it takes off until the moment it lands, is going to bother any other person?
Exactly.
No.
People put their shoes back on. They'll eat quietly.
You're going to be so careful because you might go down the chute.
Yeah. You know what I love? There can be a whole drama aspect of it. When the plane is dark, with the spotlight, you don't know who the spotlight's going to land on.
Sorry.
So it has to like dart all over, suspense build.
So what happens?
What a show this would be. This would be the best TV show.
So down the chute, that's all it's called.
What happens if you're in the middle of your down the chute moment, but you're flying over the Atlantic? So you're going to drop this person in the ocean?
Bye-bye.
Yes.
Probably better.
Bye-bye.
How are they going to get home?
They're going to die.
No, the whole thing about down the chute is you're dead.
We're helping humankind.
That's the thing about flying. You're high up.
Yeah.
No, the consequences have got to be real.
No, I mean, I thought you were talking about putting them in a capsule that will land them safely somewhere.
No.
So you're actually going to kill these people.
No, because they'll return a month later and fart another four times. They must learn their lesson properly.
We don't really
down the
care.
Chute.
Yes.
That's the show.
Okay, let me go through the rest of these quickly. So we've got the armrest hog. Okay, then we've got...
Can we just clear this up? There's a rule for armrests.
Well, I don't know if it's a written rule. It's more an unwritten rule.
This has got to be the rule.
Okay.
If you're in the middle seat, which is the shittiest place to be, on a row of three or a row of five on the bigger flights, if you're anywhere in the middle, you get the armrests.
Both of them?
Yes.
But then in a row of three, there are three armrests. So if everyone takes their right armrest, everyone will have one.
No, the person on the aisle, if you hate the person next to you, you can lean into the aisle slightly.
Mm.
Okay? If you're on the window side, you can lean into the window slightly.
Okay.
If you're in the middle, there's nowhere to go.
Okay. So you need both.
You need human rights.
Okay.
Human rights, please.
Then we've got the Chatty Cathy. This is, they're just people who just won't shut up on the plane. Mm. The Boozer comes in at number 5.
Oh, I love the Boozer.
I've never experienced an actual drunk person on a flight.
Okay.
But yes, you do find them, and they are problematic. They're listed closer to the top. In second place is the inattentive parents.
Right.
So it's the parents that you wish would do something about their screaming toddler. And then the number one most annoying passenger, according to this American poll, the rear seat kicker. Why are you kicking the seat in front of you to begin with, though?
You know what? This is something I put a stop to on a flight that I was on once. And the mother of this child got very upset.
You terrorized a child.
I did. I terrorized a child. The child was standing up on its seat and rocking the seat backwards and forwards. And I said to the child, you got to sit down because I am a very horrible person and I will make your life a misery.
You know, that kid is probably in therapy now.
Sure.
Okay.
By the way, speaking of those people who don't stop talking on a plane and who are so rude, listen to this. This is an example. So imagine you sit next to this guy.
Thanks very much. I really appreciate it.
You don't have to sign for things up here. This is first class, you pleb.
No. I was just getting his autograph. That's JK out of Miracle.
I like champagne every 10 minutes for the rest of the flight, and make it decent stuff. Don't try and par me off with any of that French shit.
I thought your last album was absolutely brilliant.
Shut it and get my booze. And while you're at it, take that makeup off. You look like a dog. So, you're a pop star, are you?
Yeah, I'm in a group, actually, Jamiroquai.
I loathe pop stars. Worshipping Satan, taking drugs, eating chocolate bars out of women.
I don't think you're talking about me there.
And you're always stamping around on stage with your bloody thrash metal.
I think we do a bit more of a soul jazzy funk.
I prefer a nice soothing military band, but they're not allowed on Top of the Pops because they're not homosexual.
Listen, it's very nice talking to you.
And what about all your poncy, gobby paddy mates, eh? Bono, Bob Geldof, going to see the Pope, forcing us to collect bottle tops. Why can't you lot do what you're good at? Being alcoholics and having sex with schoolgirls.
Do you think you could shut up for more than 5 seconds? Would that be possible?
I beg your pardon! Christ, you pop stars are arrogant! You're not on the Anton Deck show now, you know! Right. You girls! How dare you go away when I'm talking to you! Come back here, you badly trained baboon! Oh, God, I got rid of him. Bloody pop star. If I'd fallen asleep, it would have buggered me.
All right, so that's the kind of person you don't want to end up next to.
No, definitely not.
All right, let's go to Ben's dad, who knows something about Lincoln.
Yeah, so
What's the link here, Ben?
That fairy tale FA Cup story from last night. 1-0 over Ipswich Town. See, none of us forgot that.
No. You breezed past it so quickly, I didn't think it even mattered to you.
I told you, it was the big football story from last night.
Really?
92nd minute winner, they go to the fourth round.
But you said we should watch it, and then you later on said, well, maybe you shouldn't.
No, that was AFCON.
No, you also did say that you said not the greatest football.
But the moment, Gareth.
Okay, I'll take your word for it. Is Ben's dad on? I can't hear you. Come in here, Lucas. Okay, okay. I don't know, you think I can lip read? What's the story?
He's not picking it up.
He's not picking up.
Come on, man.
So is your dad originally from there?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's his hometown. That's his hometown.
We'll try him a little bit later on. I don't know anyone from Lincoln. So, you know, as a substitute for your dad.
Lincoln.
Well, it's a fascinating old city, right? And it's got this massive cathedral.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like,
it's beautiful.
Like 1007 or wherever they built that, something along those lines.
Well, since we've decided we would go to Ben's dad and he's not available, we will instead carry on with some more news in a moment or two. I thought we'd just take a quick break, let everybody get their bearings. We've got a really interesting guest coming in a little bit later on who I'm fascinated and enthralled to speak to. He is the producer of the amazing show Planet Earth 2, which everybody's talking about. You know, every now and then one of these shows comes along and they just, everyone is just blown away by the incredible visual smorgasbord of just magnificence and majesty that we have in nature. And there's so much of it that we don't even know about. I said earlier, half sarcastically, we live on this planet for thousands of years. We don't even know who shares the planet with us. We don't know the first thing about anything. And then when we do find out, we usually go and destroy the place where this this creature lives with such monsters. Have you got him there or not? Oh, you got him. Okay, here's Ben's dad. See, I told you, I was just padding for time. All right. What's happening? Good morning, Chris. How are you?
Fine, Gareth, fine. I'm good. The year's looking pretty good. We're in for a really stinking hot day, and you've delayed my bicycle ride, but for you, I'll do anything.
Nah, it's only a bicycle. Nobody cares about those. All right, now, let's talk about Lincoln. This is where you're from in England, right?
Well, that is my birthplace, and Ben omitted to mention that today. Maybe he was waiting for me to tell him that. But there's a great story about this, because my very first football game I went to watch was back in 1963.
Uh-huh.
Come on, you mathematicians. How many years ago is that?
1,000.
Oh, you know we suck at this game.
You know we can't.
That's why I ask you.
We can't add anything up.
54. Okay, 54 years ago, I went to see my very first professional football game, and it happened to be Lincoln versus Ipswich at the very same ground. Lincoln happened to lose 2-1 that day, and strangely enough, that the goalkeeper for Ipswich Town was a guy called Roy Bailey.
Huh.
And he happens to be the father of our very own Gary Bailey.
You're kidding.
No kidding.
And it's,
anyway,
it's taken all these years.
Year after year after year, and ended down in the fourth division, where they stayed for nearly 50 years. And in fact, 5 years ago, they were actually kicked out of the Football League, and they've been playing in the non-league for the last few years.
Uh-huh.
And last night, they played a team 5 tiers above them, Ipswich Town.
Yes.
It was a 2-2 draw in Ipswich 2 weeks ago. So last night, it was even on live on TV. That's how special it was. And as Ben said, they managed to win. So in the next round, they play another second division team called Brighton. They could have been drawn against Manchester United or Arsenal or Liverpool. That's what the FA Cup does.
That's amazing. So you've actually been waiting for more than 50 years to see a reversal of the game that you first saw.
That's it. Wow. You know me, I'm a patient sort of guy.
That's amazing. That's right.
I don't know if Ben's shown you the picture, but one of the most famous things about Lincoln, it's got a cathedral that's over 1,000 years old.
Yeah, that's right.
It stands looking over the city on top of a hill, and it's absolutely spectacular. I believe it's the most spectacular in England. That's about all that happened in Lincoln, because I left when I was 18 years old, never to return.
Yeah, you don't miss it, do you?
You do, actually. You know, the couple of times that I've been back to England, I have popped in, and it was nice to see. I could actually walk past the very house, the very room I was born in.
Huh.
The school I used to go to, some of the pubs that I used to frequent. And I met my dear wife in Lincoln.
Oh, that's a good thing.
And we're still together. So yeah,
that's amazing.
And some good things come out of Lincoln.
They do. Do you still have family there?
No, there's nobody there. My mother died 5 years ago, and my brother moved away from there. So there's nothing in Lincoln at all now.
Just a cathedral, really.
Just a huge cathedral, Roman ruins. It's 2 hours from everywhere.
And an occasional
But another
victory.
Amazing story about the club was that they appointed a manager this season who wasn't a big coach or anything. Some guy from Essex, and he and his brother run the club. And they run it on a very much a community basis, where they make the players go out to schools and the community, and they make them mix with the people, as opposed to the aloofness of most league clubs. And last week, when the fans were queuing for tickets for this game, the manager was outside handing tea to the queue. Can you imagine Mourinho or Pep Guardiola doing that in Manchester?
Hell no. Not a chance. All right, that's fantastic. It's what a charming little story. What an interesting little place this Lincoln is. So there we go. It took you a couple of years, but you eventually got to see a reversal of the fortunes of that team.
Absolutely.
All right, thanks so much.
May they go on to greater things.
Thank you. There's Ben's dad, Chris. Isn't that cool? Huh? Yeah. That's very cool. I like it a lot.
I like his stories.
Yeah. Ben just sits there.
Well, I like them too. I haven't heard that story before.
You haven't heard this one before?
No. I've heard other stories like 50 times, but I've never heard that one.
You were in the wild at the time he told that story for first. You were out in the forest.
No, it's a great story. Right.
What else is going on?
I see that Anonymous have again declared war on Donald Trump. But you know, like every time Anonymous declare war on someone, I'm just like, yeah, okay, and then what?
Yeah, well, they hack a couple of computers.
Yeah, and then what?
Well, they're geeks. They carry on watching Star Wars and they get bored.
Please,
didn't they declare war on the SABC as well?
Yeah, nothing happened with that because the SABC don't have any good digital platform
to hack into.
There's nothing for them to steal.
So they've now gone onto Twitter again and declaring war on Donald Trump. They're promising that the next 4 years for him are going to be hell. Okay, fine, Anonymous, do your thing.
All right.
Let's bring it back to the continent, shall we? Where a Kenyan opposition MP has urged fellow women in Kenya to impose a sex boycott on their husbands until their men register to vote in August's general election. Mishi Mboko, who is married herself, said women should withhold sex until their menfolk, yes, menfolk, present their credentials in the form of a valid voter ID card. Look, in Kenya, they have just kicked off a drive to, you know, get Kenyans to register to vote for the August 8 polls. And I suppose some MPs are trying to find, shall we say, creative ways to get as many people as possible to register to vote.
I'm in favor of this.
So this woman said, women, if your husband has not been registered as a voter, you deny him a little and tell him to go get registered and then come back home and enjoy the game.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got a little more than the game.
So we've got blowjobs in Italy for voting, and now there's a sex boycott.
There's a sex boycott in Kenya.
Basically, what it means is that women think that men only operate around sex.
Yes, they
do.
It's true.
It's kind of
true.
Pretty much.
Yeah. It's true.
And I thought you were going to like try and fight a little bit there for yourselves. That's what it's all about for you guys. It's
honesty.
All about.
Listen, you girls figured this out years ago. There's no point in us. Who are we trying to kid?
What are you going to do? Banners from beer. Okay, cool. Wine. Ciders. Vodka. Find something else.
Is the theme song of her speech Queen of Vagina?
I just like the fact that, you know, this has always been like women's trump card. When men get out of hand or they behave badly, women just go, well, fine.
And
gates
it works,
closed.
Though. Well, not for me,
sure.
But it works.
Works. And it does. It tames men. Men start listening. They're like, what? I suppose I better pay attention now.
Well, speaking of sex, do you want to hear the 10 things that women hate before sex, according to My Zimbabwe?
My Zimbabwe. This is a great site that we often refer to.
Yeah.
All right. Let's hear about the 10 things women don't like before sex.
Sloppy music.
What is sloppy music, though?
So, like Madonna, Avril Lavigne, Miley Cyrus, that sloppy stuff.
All right.
Okay.
And do not play the cheesy things like Let's Get It On or Sexual Healing too.
Oh, really? I don't like that.
Take this very seriously. It's coming from my Zimbabwe.
Okay.
Turn off your phone. There's no interruptions during sex whatsoever. So you can't be having sex and suddenly, oh, I've got to take this call. It's an absolute no-no.
Not going to work.
Disgraceful.
Groping is out. You can't just grope around like you're in the dark looking for something. It's just not on.
Mm-hmm.
Can't have it. No begging. You can't beg for sex while having before sex. Worst thing ever.
Oh. That hurts.
Being in a hurry?
I'm sorry.
Oh, you definitely
You can't be
cannot.
In a hurry. Women take a lot of time to be sexually pleased. You cannot be in a hurry.
Cannot rush that thing, huh?
Mm-hmm. Well.
Don't keep looking at your watch. These are the basic people.
You know, that's something I didn't know until now. I'll have to stop that.
See, for so long, Gareth, you've been looking at your watch and people are going, oh, I wish you wouldn't do that. Now you know. Sloppy kissing. You can't just be like a dog. Sloppy kissing is also out. Dull conversation. Don't you dare have dull conversation before sex. It's an absolute no-no.
All right.
Keep your hands off when she's not in the mood. I think this goes in the same category as begging.
But then there's not going to be any sex. So that doesn't necessarily precede sex, but don't force it. If she's not in the mood, don't think you can climb in there.
Exactly. And last but not least, on 10 things women do not want before sex, according to my Zimbabwe's, do not ask for permission.
I'm sorry.
There are conflicted people, these involved.
Strike that last one from the roll immediately.
That would mean rape.
Yeah.
Asking for permission. Most girls like a man who loves taking charge, obviously in a consensual sense. So when you ask for permission, Max, what it's saying is that you're a weak wimp. May I please kiss you? You can't say that.
I love it.
Yeah.
That's the stupidest list I've ever heard.
What were your expectations?
Well, it's my Zimbabwe. High standards of ethical journalism.
Oh, absolutely.
Not trying to throw rape in as a mere, you know, condescension rather than some actual illegality.
Don't ask for permission.
Don't ask for permission. Just do it.
Well, I've got an update on the Tulsi twins for you, if you like. You remember the Tulsi twins?
Oh, they're terrorists. They were Al-Qaeda, right?
Yeah, the 23-year-old twins, South African twins, who were arrested. When were they arrested again? Last year, in July last year, on suspicion.
Akbar, death to America.
On suspicion that they had been plotting terrorist attacks against the United States mission in Johannesburg, as well as Jewish cultural sites. Well, the Johannesburg Magistrates Court has heard that an American-led undercover operation has secured evidence against the Tulsi twins. So things seem to not be going in their favor.
Take them to Guantanamo Bay.
Mm-hmm. Do people still get taken to Guantanamo Bay?
You think Obama shut it down? He kept that
going. I don't know. I don't know.
In fact, I think he even added more prisoners. No, Guantanamo Bay is healthy and vital and keeping many people incarcerated. Yeah. No, these Tulsi twins. These are bad news.
Why are these young people doing ridiculous things, though?
Because we live in an age where you need to get attention. And if the best way for you to get attention is to join ISIS, then that's what people will do.
But it's just like, I just read the story a few days ago, and it's nothing short of disturbing. A 23-year-old guy from Florida in the U.S. has been charged for having sex with a pit bull, their family pit bull, called Baby Girl, over 100 times. Like, how messed up is that, guys? Like, what? Young people just...
Yeah. There is
giving us a bad name.
There is not a solution to every problem, I'm afraid. This is an example.
This is what happens when, you know, this Disney Channel stopped playing proper cartoons.
Is that what the cause of it is, exactly, according to you, Sia?
Because we didn't have a good, solid foundation.
Oh, you know what, people? I'm sorry. I'm sorry
white
to be
people
the...
or what people?
No, you know what, people.
Oh, okay, sorry.
did you think I was saying white people? No, you know what, people? We've had it wrong all along. We've absolutely had it wrong all along because conspiracy theorists are insisting that a new picture of Elvis Presley was taken recently. He's alive, Gareth. But we've had it wrong all along.
Yes.
They say that they now have proof that Elvis is still alive and that he, in fact, visited Graceland on his 82nd birthday.
Of course he did.
There's a picture of some guy who is very overweight in a beard, shades, and a cap. And the conspiracy theorists are saying that that is definitely Elvis. The picture was taken at Graceland because, you know, tourists still stream in there. After long insisting the singer faked his own death back in 1977 to escape the pressure of fame, fans are now saying that the singer visited a Graceland home on his 82nd birthday last week. They saw him. They interacted with him. They shared a few words.
Did he admit that he was Elvis?
No. I mean, conveniently, he didn't. The images show a large man with white hair and a white beard standing among the crowd as a cake cutting ceremony took place on Sunday on the front lawn of the king's house.
So he wanted to attend his own birthday party.
Well, yes, Sia. Okay. I mean, I don't know why you're trying to, you know, dispute what I'm telling you here. Elvis is alive.
You know, Elvis, this guy is very strange. So he disappears in 1977.
Yes.
And then he suddenly reappears for his 82nd birthday. But it's not. Nobody knows it's him. He doesn't admit it's him. And he's just chilling at Graceland.
Well, maybe he has a pretty sweet deal then.
Yeah.
Because Graceland conveniently earns about $20 million a year.
He appears in front of a crowd of people who are obsessed with Elvis.
Yes.
Looking a little bit like Elvis. And we wonder why all of these people start believing that it could be some kind of bullshit story that he ever died in the first place. We're dealing with people who are very, very strange, very mentally susceptible to emotionally susceptible to this kind of lie.
But what is it about Elvis that some people just refuse to let him go in that way?
He was the king.
Yeah,
nobody
but
nobody sang like that. No one ever has.
Yeah, but you know, we live and then we die. It's kind of part of the natural Elvis order of things.
Elvis is different. He was a superhuman. He was demigod like.
But what's his wife's name? Priscilla.
Priscilla.
There we go. Maybe she is behind this. Because they just opened a Graceland hotel, well, a guest house opposite Graceland.
Of course,
for more money.
Right, because these crazy Elvis fans, people like Randall, they'll go there every year.
Because it's modeled after Graceland. Yeah,
they can sleep in that hotel,
well.
And then they can look out of their window and they can see Graceland. It's like a pilgrimage. It's like being able to, you know, to go to Mecca once in your life if you're a Muslim. That's what Elvis's Graceland is like to Elvis fans. All right.
We've been here, then, everywhere.
We've really traveled the world in this hour. It is time to travel the world in a different way with the producer and director of Planet Earth 2, which is on the on BBC here in South Africa. And it's amazing. I've seen little clips. They sent me a couple of links to some of these clips, the trailers. It is magnificent. I still haven't seen the whole show. I will be watching it from beginning to end. It's one of those things that you absolutely cannot miss. And quite apart from being the sort of show that would have stood its own ground anywhere at any time, just for how beautifully it's made and the kinds of the kind of footage that they managed to get. Entirely apart from that, it's also become something of a social media phenomenon. There are young people all over the world, normally don't care about anything but the Kardashians, who are into this in a big way, which is tremendous. So we'll talk to the producer and director in a moment. All of that and more on the way. CliffCentral.com. It is Wednesday morning, just about 8 o'clock. I thought we'd play a little George Michael for you.
Oh.
What do you think? He's still dead, by the way. No one's seen him pitch up. Very much dead. Clear about that? Dead. CliffCentral.com.